Hello, this is Debbie Kennedy, founder of the Global Dialogue Center, and we warmly welcome you to our second Innovation Tips Dialogue. Up for discussion today is Roadblocks of Innovation. Joining me today as your host is Joel Barker. We'll both be serving as your hosts for this presentation and look forward to spending the time with you. Joel, say hello.
Well, it's a good day here in Minnesota where it's actually above freezing. And I'm looking forward to a warm conversation today.
So, Joel, you want to take us through where we're going to travel today in the next hour?
I sure will. We have a very simple agenda, ladies and gentlemen. We want to do a quick connect with you just to show you who's on the line with us and some of the things you shared with us with your notes. We're then going to talk about roadblocks to innovation. This is a kind of a new thing for us. We've been doing a very specific webinar on tactics of innovation, and this is kind of a follow-up to say, are there some commentary or discussion on other things that are being said about innovation that we would also like to make commentary on it? After that, we're going to do a quick overview on our webinar for those of you who might be interested in it, and then we're going to wrap up with a informal group conversation, Q&A, and officially end up at 1 o'clock.
And then Joel and I will also be staying on to hang out for a few minutes afterwards. If there are other questions and things that you want to talk about, we'll be here for a few minutes after the session for those of you that want to stay. We want to begin by connecting with all of you, and we like to start giving you a glimpse of who's here with you. And we actually have, as of a couple of minutes ago, we've got over 200 people that are logging in from different places around the world, at least 17 countries, and over 35 states now from across the United States. And this is amazing that this happens. You won't be able to see everybody on the attendee list because some of them are calling in. Others have a firewall that doesn't allow us to see them, but this will give you a glimpse of who is here. Also, when you registered, we looked at all the organizations that were coming. We have over 150 different organizations of every different sort and type. This gives you some of the types of organizations and also the areas of expertise that are represented in this group of leaders and innovators that are joining us today. In addition to that, we asked you to, when you put your title in, we took a composite of just a partial list of the people that were attracted to come here. So it gives you an idea of the leaders and innovators that are showing up to talk about roadblocks to innovation. And Joel, what do you see when you look at this diverse group?
Well, the thing I see more than ever is just how many people from how many different areas are interested in innovation. It is there's almost a tsunami of innovation discussion going on worldwide. You know, I read more than 45 publications a month, and it's almost in every single publication. So it does speak to how important the whole concept of innovation is and how both organizations, profit and not-for-profit, see it as a powerful lever.
We asked you at registration if you would tell us what best describes your top challenges in sharing new ideas and new thinking in your organizations or with your unique customers. And this is a composite of the answers that you gave us. And interesting in this is it's a little different than what we've had in the last few months. 85% said resistance to change in all of its different forms. And 53% of you said breaking through the noise. And I believe, Joel, that that is probably the highest we've ever had in breaking through the noise. And it started out at 23 and stayed steady almost 2 years.
Yeah, it's kind of a surprise. We'll have to watch and see if that's what happens as we proceed on to see if there's, in fact, a sea change in what's going on in innovation.
Yes. Also, if you note the other issues that people brought up that are always unique and different, there's always a few things that are different. We hope in this session that we will, in some way, either through the dialogue we're having, the introduction we're giving to you, to some of our other resources, you'll see that all of these things will be touched on. So let's get started. Joel, you want to pick up?
Yeah, it's always good to get a framework, and what I'd like to do is just make sure we have a definition of innovation fairly clear. We collected some good definitions here, I think, that all build one on the other. Organization for Economic Cooperation Development defined innovation as new products, business processes, and organic changes that create wealth or social welfare. I think it's interesting that they bring in non-monetary wealth there. Fresh thinking that creates value, that's from Goldman Sachs. James Bright, who is was my mentor for many years at Harvard, said a new idea successfully implemented in the marketplace, knowing he meant any marketplace, so it could be an internal marketplace or an external marketplace. Peter Drucker has one that I like a lot, change that creates a new dimension of performance. And what you'll notice with all of these that have been listed so far is, in a sense, they either explicitly or implicitly hint a new value that you didn't have before. And then we have one more of Drucker's, which is innovation is a specific instrument of entrepreneurship, the act that endows resources with a new capacity to create wealth. So we take old resources or different resources, arrange them in such a way through our innovative thinking, and create both the opportunity for and the reality of new wealth, especially if you think of new wealth as being new ideas all by themselves. So keep those definitions in mind, because that's what we're kicking around. Now, another thing we've been doing lately, and it's part of our commentary, is to make recommendations. And this is a book that I strongly recommend. It's called Ideas Are Free by Alan Robinson and Dean Schroeder. By the way, they don't even know I'm doing this. So this is not something they asked me to do. This is something because I have so much respect for their book. This book, by the way, matches up with Debbie's work in particular, in the sense that they are trying to give a larger scope and arrangement of where innovation fits within an organization and how you deal with it. My work is more specific. Debbie's work is more global, as someone who runs the Global Dialogue Center should be. Couple just points out of Alan's and Dean's book. They talk about the importance of small ideas, small innovations, and I'll just read three here. But it's really worth taking a look at the notes, and like I say, I think the book is a great book. Small innovations are easier to actualize. They're usually small in cost. And one of the things I think is most interesting about their observation is they're hard to copy, because that they are small gives them very low visibility. And the end result because of that is you can aggregate many small innovations into a very large advantage, and your competitors will not understand what's going on. So, I think we'll get ready to begin our commentary on something we ran into in the internet. Debbie, do you want to take over from here?
Yes. Something popped up in our path, an article, and it was based around a presentation that Ryan Jacoby did from IDEO in New York. It was called Leading Innovation, The Process is No Substitute. And in that article, he identified 7 deadly sins of innovation, and Joel sent them to me, and we decided to make this the basis of our seeding the dialogue today, so that we could not only benefit from knowing about Ryan's work, but also be able to add to the discussion with some of the things that we've seen as we've gone along. We're going to actually do the first 3 to seed the discussion, and then the last 4 we'll leave open to discussion after we give you a chance to have your mind stimulated with a few ideas. And Joel, you want to pick up with 1.
Right. One of the things that Jacoby talked about was, he said one of the worst things you can do is thinking that the answer, that is the innovation that you want to find, is in here rather than out there. And what he basically meant was that somewhere inside your organization, the innovation is always going to show up. It's available to us inside. Fact is that is a mistake, and his point about getting outside, get outside the conference room, get outside your organization, get outside your industry, I think is very important. As a matter of fact, I thought it was so important, I made a video that actually picked up on his statement. I made it before I saw his statements, but it shows that we're thinking along the same way, and that is that there is a place where innovations are being found more and more these days. In fact, I identified it as an unused area. Now the use is starting to pick up. It's called the verge. And the verge is where something and something different meet. And to frame that very simply, it says that there are probably huge opportunities for innovations taking strengths that you have in your organization and joining with strengths in organizations you would never think to join with. I'll just give you one quick example. A robot company in Germany joined with a roller coaster company in England and created a thing called RoboCoaster, which is now considered the most exciting theme park ride in the world. And if you go to the Harry Potter ride in Universal, you will in fact ride this new kind of roller coaster built on an industrial robot's base. Who would have thought that you could take an industrial robot, combine it with a theme park roller coaster, and get a totally new ride? That's the example of thinking outside the room, outside the conference room, outside your industry for finding innovations. Debbie?
Yes, I want to look at it from a little different point of view. One of the things Ryan said that he did, Ryan Jacoby did, once a week is he goes out and takes pictures just to see the world with a different view. And it reminded me of something that I learned from Peter Drucker many years ago when I was first starting my business. And I remember reading in one of his books, The Post-Capitalist Society, he talks about that most of us have so much more in our minds and our experience and all the things we have to offer that we hardly use. And so when I look at the idea of getting outside, I think we have to learn to see each other and ourselves differently. That when this is actually from my book, and when I started to look at what differences meant, not in just its traditional sense, but also in all the things that make each individual up, that a lot of times we overlook the wealth of innovative talent that lies right within our organizations. So I would say that one of the things I would add to what Ryan said is you have to learn to see differences differently. That is going to be a skill of the 21st century, is being able to see differences differently within your organization and when you go out to the verge, as Joel talked about, to meet other companies, other places, other organizations, other talented people, or you bump into them inside your company, that the outsider that could bring that new innovation maybe just a department away.
What I'm hearing you say, Debbie, is there are insider outsiders.
Yes.
Yes, and we don't know how to, and we're not very good at finding them because we don't know that spectrum of difference that you showed us.
What's interesting is that in the questions that many of you put in, there are quite a few of you, and this happens commonly, that people are frustrated in having people see their talent. And that is one of the ways that you begin to do that, is be not only seeing yourself, but others differently.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joel.
Yep. Okay. His second point of his seven was, and this is kind of a cute way to say it, talking about it rather than building it. In other words, people want to get together and have meetings and write memos and have discussions. And every time you have those meetings, you've basically put off action somewhat. You may have refined what you're thinking about, but what Ryan is suggesting, I think, which is very good, is do something. Build a prototype. Take a shot at it. Modify something. See if you can make the idea tangible enough so that you can really handle it. Some of you know from my early film on paradigms that I invented with a guy named Jeff Birch, a bike seat. We called it the easy seat, and you're looking at it right now. And I think you can see that it was the reason I used it in my film, because it was a paradigm shift in bikes, bike seats at that time. Came out in 79 and is still being sold today, I'm very proud to say. But here's the story I want to tell. Jeffrey and I were thinking about this thing, and we had talked about it. So we said, let's do something with this. So I found an old dentist chair, bought it for $50, took the headrest off the old dentist chair, we welded it to a bike seat, and we rode around the city of St. Paul on a dental chair headrest because it had these two cushions. Now, we might have been able to talk about it more, but we learned so much from that very rough prototype that we were able to move much more rapidly into the final design of the seat than we would have had we just talked and drawn and chatted about it. So doing something, I think, really is it's a key point. Don't just talk. Start building. Start doing. Start trying to figure out a prototype to take a look at it.
And following with what Joel said, because I totally agree, is I want to add to this discussion by talking about how to do that. One of the ways that came up for me when I was, this was about 20 years ago when I first started my own business after I left IBM, and I had a situation with my one of my first major customers, and I was going to lead a session with a general manager and 30 of their senior managers, and she had crammed so much into this agenda, it was just full right up to the minute. And the night before, she called me and said, hey, I forgot to tell you, I really want to have identified the top three challenges and have all of our managers agree on them before we leave. I have no more time to give you, so you'll have to figure out how to get that done. Well, this was definitely a challenge and one of those things where you stay up all night. This is a picture of what I actually ended up doing that night. We created 5 decks of cards, and there were 5 tables of leaders, of the 30 leaders, and each one of the 12 decks lists 12 challenges, and I dipped into my toolbox from the past when I worked at IBM as a manager for 15 years and thought about what were the top things that were challenges in the work that I did, and I put them on these cards. Each card deck had the same ones, and we put 2 blank ones in and said, if you don't find what you're looking for, write your own. I gave them 5 minutes. It was amazing. It was electric. The whole room went crazy, and in 5 minutes, 30 managers, senior managers, identify the top 3 challenges. They actually came up with 5. 3 of them were all the same, and 2 of them were unique. They voted on them, and in 15 minutes, we were done. And that proved to me that something very wonderful. It was a step beyond brainstorming. It took 5 minutes. The debrief was 10. And in the end, ideas that you put on the table create momentum. And sometimes somebody else's ideas become springboards for you to really focus in on what you already know. And this led to a couple of products that I made. This was one that I, the last one that I did, that actually has oversized cards, and it allows you to be able to put 3 on the table. Some threw them on a plane and figure out what you want to go talk about. And this in itself led to other things, but that idea of reaching out beyond brainstorming, someone asked that question about, we would just focus so much on it, is we even have to innovate how we use some of those old processes and make them work faster for us, because a picture is worth 1,000 words.
In a sense, Debbie, you gave us a twofer. You gave us an interesting way to get people to engage in thinking innovatively, but also the product itself. You went from the night before to the working product, just as Ryan said, build something, do something, don't just talk about it, and it allowed you to lead to these cards. So that's kind of interesting that it's both conceptually a story, but it's also the process right there.
Yes, and I agree. And one other little thing, too, is that I've pointed out to you that you don't have to buy a product to do something. I mean, you can do things, because these were just off the shelf, cut up and laminated the night before.
Yep. Well, it's just like me finding the dental chair.
Yeah, you know? No, I know. The resources we have, the outsider might be right near you.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can use to build, what you can use to get a prototype going. And so you just have to be flexible about that. The third element of the 7 that we're looking at today, the third piece that we said we would look at, is this statement of executing when you should be exploring. This is a kind of a funny phrase, but it is a dilemma that you run into with people who want to move rapidly. That is, let's go from a rough prototype right down to the final product as quickly as we can, because I want to get things done. What Ryan is suggesting here is take a little bit more time to explore what's going on. Look more at your marketplace. Look more at the trends that are surrounding this innovation that you're looking at. Do not be afraid to take a little bit more time to explore before you act, because that added information that you gain from that exploration may make all the difference in terms of how you're going to finalize your product. So we do support what he's saying in terms of doing early prototypes, but what we're also saying is then don't rush to judgment. Now, there's a specific angle to that that Debbie wants to talk about in terms of a process that she has for thinking about that.
Yes, and even this picture really helps a lot, too. I actually had a picture like this once I used to use, and I did one of these events with a group of people where we were at a climbing rock. And what was really came, one of the learnings we got from it, there was a guy just like this one. He got up there. He was going lickety-split all the way to the top, and he turned around and looked down, and no one else was behind him. And this is what happens when you launch too quickly. And that's what Joel is talking about here. What I've learned, my field is in communications, and one of the things that we find often is we will see a leader or someone who has something really great they want to get out. They get it together in record time, and they instantly want to go right here, and they launch. And when you have a big thud, when you launch something and you're surprised that everybody's not quite as excited as you are, it's because you've completely overlooked this part, acceptance. And generating acceptance, which is both a outward kind of activity and also behind the scenes, gathering your champions, getting some sponsors along the way, making sure that you're seeding the idea for a while so that when you launch, you have an anchor to go to. This is absolutely the most overlooked and discounted success factor. And it is usually, if you do an after-action review, it's almost always the reason why something failed.
There is a metaphor that I use that extends Ryan's discussion on exploring. And the image I use is the wagon trains, the wagon masters, and the scouts. And I always talk about what the good wagon masters did is they sent out their scouts before they rolled the wagons. Well, that's in a sense what he's talking about, exploring the terrain in front of you. These are some characteristics of good scouts. I won't go into them, but if you think about it, scouts do have to be fast, and the information they bring back is decision-enhancing, not decision-making. But you want your scouts to go explore over the horizon. There's a tool that I developed that I use for this in particular, and it works very well for innovations. It's called the implications wheel. And basically, you put your innovation in the center of a circle where the word topic is. You ask yourself what kinds of things might happen just as soon as we launch this innovation, and you generate what are called first-order implications. Those are consequences or implications that occur immediately as you launch your new idea. You then ask yourself, what are the implications of those implications? These are called second-order implications. And if you think about exploration or scouting, all of a sudden you are beginning to push yourself out into the future to ask yourself what kinds of implications, positive and negative, might occur. And as the structure is designed, you do it one more time, out to the third order. What you're looking at here is a pattern of scouting the future that allows you to uncover possible implications, both positive and negative, that then feed back into the design of your innovation and the marketing of your innovation and the launch of your innovation so that you avoid as much as possible the potential negative implications that you've uncovered and that you optimize as much as possible the potential positive implications. This kind of exploration, by the way, and I feel very strongly about this, it's the new responsibility of the 21st century to understand the long-term consequences of our decisions, of our innovations, before we release them, not after we release them.
Very good. So, Joel, if you were going to sum up, do you have a few things? What do you see?
Well, I think what Ryan was pointing out in his first set of the first set of three is that getting outside your organization and your comfort zone is of high value for coming up with innovations. And there are specific kinds of ways of doing that, like innovation at the verge. Building it, like you did with the card deck, Debbie, instead of just talking about it so that you can try something out and really try it out, is an extremely good behavior for moving the innovation along and also, by the way, stretching your imagination as you're doing it. Exploring before you act is the third of his observations. And as I was just saying, that ability to look around and understand both the consequences and the direction that you're heading before you act on it will make it, will, in a sense, in one sense, slow you down, but it slows you down in a good way so that when you really do go from prototype to actuality, you do it more wisely.
So we have covered the first three, and we want to open the lines for a few minutes and be able to take a comment, a question, anything that you want to talk about. We have a question from Douglas. And Douglas, if you're there, if you're on the phone or on VOIP, you can unmute your mic.
Am I on?
Yeah. Hello.
Okay. Have you guys read Stephen Johnson's book called Where Good Ideas Come From, The Natural History of Innovation?
Could you say it again? Where Good Ideas Come From?
Yeah, Stephen Johnson is the author, and the book is called Where Good Ideas Come From, The Natural History of Innovation.
I have not read that.
Yeah.
Is it your recommendation we should?
Oh, yeah. It's really good. He talks about how, like, diverse situations, you know, will create situations where innovation is more probable, like the reef, the city, the web. He also talks about the concepts of the adjacent possible and the slow function serendipity and how error, you know, like you want to make mistakes faster because you need to make them if you're going to get there. And also about exaptation, where you, like, you, it's like Gutenberg taking the concept of the wine press and turning it into the printing press. And he also talks about open platforms that build on each other, like the World Wide Web, for example, where, you know, like Twitter builds on SMS, and then a whole bunch of stuff gets built on top of that, which makes a difference.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that recommendation.
Very good. And Doug, maybe you can could you type his name on the board?
Yeah, I'll give that a shot.
Okay, great. That would be great. Mark or Purple, we'll be glad to talk with you. And Joel, while we're waiting for someone else to come on, do you want to add a little something about the seven deadly sins?
Yeah, we might as well go on to number four because it actually ties with what Doug was talking about. The summary statement is being smart, but when I read through the commentary, I thought it was much more about being open. Because I know some very smart people who are not open at all. And one of the deals, and Doug was actually hinting at that, which is this ability to be unafraid of really strange things or strange combinations. Wine press, printing press. That's a good example of, you know, somebody seeing one thing and working another. Innovation at the Verge is that way too. But the idea that a good friend of mine says you can kill any idea in its cradle. You know, when it's a baby idea, it's easy to kill unless you're open to the idea that you've got to give it a chance to kind of spring forth. When I was inventing the bike seat, anybody who knew about bicycle saddles was telling me the design was completely wrong. And yet here we are, 1979, 89, 99, 2009, it's still being sold because it did solve a problem for a category of bike riders. So number four, being open, I think is one of those key things. Just relax. Don't let it upset you. It may look weird. Stay with it. You'd be surprised how much good thinking goes into even weird ideas.
One of the things that comes up for me in this, the being open part of it, is if you're working with other people, and a lot of the questions that came in were about being able to help, how do they break through the noise or break through the resistance to change to get to somebody. And one of the ways, if you understand that the person that you're trying to work with is probably in this place, you know, they might be a little afraid to be wrong, how big is the risk, is I always think of a tip that I got years ago when I was in management school at IBM that it said, it's kind of corny, but it said, life in yards is hard. Life in inches is a cinch.
Uh-huh.
And if you create small things, like the small idea that will make that person who's fearful look really great and it's very visible, then you give them confidence to take maybe another step.
Hi, Debbie. This is Maureen.
Hi, Maureen. Tell us where you're calling from.
Well, I'm mobile right now, and I am in Kentucky.
We love mobile people in Kentucky. Great.
Perfect. Well, I'm a long way from home, but I want to thank you and Joel for the content today. This is a very, very interesting topic, and I really appreciate the discussion. I am not able to see your slides, and I was wondering if they're available in another way, perhaps after the conference.
They are. They're actually available when you get to your office and right now, and will be available later with their recorded, the audio recording of the session too, at globaldialoguecenter.com/tips2. And there's a slideshow summary that has basically all the slides.
Excellent. Well, thank you
so
much.
If she can't write that down because she's driving, Debbie, is there a...
I can send it to her. How about if I do that? Or you can email me. But
that'd be great. I'll email you after the call then.
Yes. It's also, if you got your login information at the top, there's a place that says special instructions, and there is, I put the URL there too.
Excellent. I'll refer to that then.
Thank you
so much.
What one thing are you going to take away, Maureen?
Well, I thought you really had an interesting comment about the depth of gain acceptance. I am launching a new business opportunity right now. I think that we're doing something pretty innovative. I get reinforcement that it's innovative because sometimes when I describe it to people, they catch right on to it and think it's a great idea, and others kind of wrinkle up their forehead and go, I don't get it. I think that gain acceptance stage is going to be very important for me, and I'm going to work that into my business plan to do something small first, get it out there, see what kind of support, what kind of feedback I get once I have something small to show folks, and then move forward if we have, done the right exploration and have some.
That is a very good place to start, and there are a whole lot of other small little things that you can do that I are going to talk a little bit about later, and we actually teach this in one of our classes called How to Get Buy-In for New Ideas, and Joel's going to give an introduction. We're going to work together to do that in a few minutes, so maybe you'll stay on the line.
I absolutely will.
Thank you. Thanks so much
Thank
for sharing.
You.
This is Debbie. Can you hear me all right?
No, we're getting a lot of static, actually.
Okay, then let's just not worry about it, okay?
Okay. Sorry.
Ask her if you want, you can type on the whiteboard.
Yes.
Just go down and click the little double A down there, and that'll let you put in text, right, Debbie? Is that how
Click the little double A at the bottom of the board, and you can write on the board.
There we go. All right, good.
There you go. You can draw on the board. You can do whatever you want on the board. Make a comment, a thought, ask a question.
It looked like, Angel, you were trying to put something on
there. Yes.
So go ahead and type it on.
We'll look forward to that. So if we go back to maybe pick up one of these other ideas about being impatient for the wrong things.
Jim Bright, who was my mentor, taught me a lot about innovation. One of the things he did is he tracked how fast it took an innovation from inception to marketplace. Up to the 1990s, it took 10 years. These days, because we have ability to produce 3D prototypes and some other things, that time has crunched, but it's still not much faster than 5 years. And so one of the things I say to people when they're getting started on something is, if you think you're going to get your innovation out, there's certain exceptions to that, like software, where you can literally write the code and have it out. But in terms of physical things, it takes longer than you think, and it especially takes longer than you think if you're going to do it right and understand the long-term implications. So I think Ryan's point here is you just have to be patient with some of these things to get it developed. Pushing it out too fast is actually puts you at risk.
What I try to help people see is that you need to redefine what starting is. And starting sometimes is in that, as Ryan said, that exploration state where you're looking for who's going to execute, who's going to be on your team, who are going to be the champions, what's the foundation that's there to support it. When you've got a group of people, how are managers and employees or managers and their teams going to be able to really put their fingerprints on it? These are all things that make something work when it launches.
Yeah. By the way, a couple of people have written some very thoughtful things that fit with
they
that.
They have.
Yep.
We should probably read them for people on the phone.
Yeah, that's right. Innovation is a snail that hides in its shell till it's ready to come out. And sometimes innovations involve politics.
Very good, BB. Yeah. That is excellent. And Angela wrote, love the reminder not to be impatient for wrong things. Isn't that the truth? In Switch, the Heath brothers remind us that successful implementations, change campaigns, looks like failure in the middle. Very nice.
By the way, I just noticed, Angela, are you also recommending Switch as a book worth reading? Because here's what's cool about what's going on right now. You know, there are hundreds of books out there. It's important to find out which ones carry weight, and that's why I gave Ideas Are Free. We also got the Where Good Ideas Come From as a recommendation. It looks like Angela's trying to at least suggest. Yeah, she said yes. Switch is another good book. So this is very helpful because what we're getting is we're getting reviewers, in a sense, saying that this is worth your time. Thank you for doing that, folks.
Another way to be able to benefit from the people that are right here with you is that in your handouts, number 3 handout, there are 47 ideas that were submitted by participants when they registered. And I think when we finish the session today, we'll probably have more than that. We'll post with the recording. But at the time we actually took it off yesterday, there were 47 people that had offered a best practice, a tip, a book, an insight of some sort that has worked for them that they're passing on to you. So we've got a global knowledge share on innovation right here in this event.
Right. By the way, this is the most whiteboard activity we've ever had. This is quite a group. somebody wrote, current innovation is stifled within job markets by oversaturation. I assume of third-party recruiters are killing the market, which is why people are not. Whoever put that on, if you want to turn on your mic and talk a little bit about that, I think that's very important about how in an uncertain market, one of the things that comes with innovation is people will say, well, who do you think you are? You know, why are you trying to change things? In other words, innovation has, by its nature, an unsettling effect because it changes the way we do things. Even when it makes us faster and more efficient, it alters the protocols that we're really good at. Therefore, it creates uncertainty. So this thing about work is very important. Did you figure, whoever that is, can you get online? If not, write no. Oh, all right, can't.
If that's helpful. And we'll also put up another board.
Right. Somebody just wrote, great organizations use time of crisis as opportunity. You know, that is really true, but I would also tell you something else. Those organizations who don't wait for the crisis have a substantial advantage over those who are in crisis. Think about this. If you have to wait for a crisis for your people to be willing to change, it means you will only change at the highest risk time of your organization. Whereas if you can begin to get innovations accepted in non-crisis times, you will move from good thing to good thing, not good to bad, back to good. So I agree with that observation that organizations tend to be more responsive to innovation in times of crisis because they're taking on water, right? They're going under and they don't want to go under. But one of the things that when Debbie and I teach this seminar on getting buy-in, one of the things we try and push is do the innovations while times are good, move from strength to strength, not strength to obsolescence, and then try to become strong again. It's a tough thing to do.
Yes. Joel and I are actually going to stay for a little while after the session is over for those of you that want to hang out and talk some more specifically about your questions and other comments, and we'll be putting up other walls for you to write on. Right now, we're going to transition into a little introductory preview of an online professional development class that we teach that is related. And this all started because Joel and I have worked together many years. We began doing some webinars on innovating in hard times when the economy went south, and we had amazing people that kept showing up. And we found, we started asking them some questions. One of the things we found out that is and affirmed is that innovation is difficult, even if you're the new idea. And so we began asking people, and now have asked over 3,000 people, leaders and innovators all around the world, to tell us about their top challenges, as we did you. And this is the overall results from 2009, the latter part of 2009 to 2011, that we found is that 95%, which went up 10 points in the last year and a half on resistance to change, told us that they had these. Didn't matter what kind of organization, public sector, private sector, it was all part of the same thing. We were all experiencing this. And breaking through the noise, which you all broke through another category, 53% in your group, which is the highest we've ever had, saying that breaking through the noise is becoming the most challenging part. What we know for sure is that even great organizations, we've learned this talking with people, working with them, and teaching them, is that they squelch new ideas unintentionally. And if you can be in charge and changing that reality and how you go about it. So from that, Joel and I took our two minds of doing what to do and how to do it and created a session called How to Get Buy-In for New Ideas. And so, Joel, maybe you can walk us through and tell us more about the class.
Yeah. What we tried to do with this session is to cover two really, really important things about innovation. So anybody who has got either internal innovation that they have to deal with or external innovation that they have to deal with, we tried to put together this hour and a half package that gives you some very specific things to do to help you overcome resistance, both internally and externally, but also help you understand how people think about innovation so that you can hear their concerns and understand how to be responsive to them. So the idea is that if we do that properly, you will have almost a protocol for setting up your innovation.
One thing that I'd like to add to that too, Joel, and I've learned this in just recent weeks. I went to a training fair at an organization not long ago talking about this, and not only will this help you with innovations with your organization and big things, but also in learning how to more effectively communicate with your manager, your team, your customer, your partners. All of those, it does that too, while helping you, even if you're the person that's being reinvented, say, as you're transitioning. So it is broader than what we originally thought, don't you think?
Well, I do. In fact, Maureen was saying she was going to start with something little, and this works with little things. It works with big things. If you think about it, how often do we come even to our family and say, I've got this idea I want us to explore, but we don't have a way to kind of lay it out, roll it out so it gets heard properly? Well, I think between your stuff and my stuff, Debbie, that's really what we're giving them. So here's our little list here. Pinpoint why people are resistant to new ideas and how to remove the barriers to resistance. That's them. We identify 10 specific tactics to engage sponsors and others in reducing that resistance and helping them see the new idea through their eyes, by the way. Debbie, in particular, has three critical success strategies. The stuff I'm bringing are just literally step-by-step. They're tactics, but you need an envelope inside of which to put those tactics, and Debbie has figured out a really good way to frame and set up that larger environment so that the tactics can work. Part of what you're going to learn is why people are legitimately and rationally resistant. That's a big theme in our discussion, which is people are not resistant irrationally or stupidly. They almost always have very good reasons for that. What are those reasons? How do you deal with them? And then we literally, this stuff, that the materials that we're going to have, you can go right home and apply it and change the way you present your ideas and change the way you format your ideas so that people can hear the idea and hear what you're trying to get across. Two things we say is, how can we help you transcend resistance to change, and can we show you how to break through the noise? And those are really the two goals we have for the webinar. So next one, June 2nd, Pacific Daylight Time, 10 a.m. to 11:30 p.m. And then there'll be a 30-minute group exchange after that for Q&A. And in terms of cost, it's very simple, $195 early bird registration, that is before May 15th, $99 for participants who are in education, nonprofit, and we have some special group discounts. And then if you kind of sneak in at the last minute, it's cost you $290.
And it also includes a video recording of the program to have for reference afterwards, along with two tools that we give out and other resources. So it's a full package that goes with it. And you can go learn more about it at howtogetbuyinfornewideas.com. So this has been a wonderful hour, and Joel and I are going to wrap up the formal part of it, and then we're going to hang out for a few minutes afterwards if any of you have any other comments or questions or insights to share with one another. We want to remind you of a couple of things. One, your handouts are located on the console and at upper right-hand corner in the three white pieces of paper, or also online at globaldialoguecenter.com/tips2. And a couple of little highlights. One, on the website, we have, Joel talked about Innovation at the Verge, his film, and you can learn more about Innovation at the Verge at innovationattheverge.com. And also, there is in the handouts the 47 wonderful things that your peers have offered up today, and there will probably be a greater list when we actually post the finals onto the website with the recording because of the additional people that signed on today. Also, offer my book. Joel actually wrote the foreword for it, and we wrote two chapters in it together on innovating at the verge and collaborating at the verge. And it's a practical guide to answer a lot of the questions you ask, a lot of how-to questions. How do you engage people? How do you make it real? How do you transcend resistance? And there's wonderful first-person stories from people of all different kinds of organizations and different sectors telling how they did it.
I mean, a great book.
Thank you.
It's definitely on my recommended list, and not just because she's a friend. It's a really fine book.
And the two models I used are also in there with more detailed explanation, the perpetual cycle of action and also the dimensions of difference. And then there are some webinars up in the handouts. One is Joel has some free webinars coming up for the implication wheel.
And that's just it's an overview of the tool so you can understand all the things that it can do. So it's a free webinar, and it basically is, let me show you its capacity.
Yes, and then on May 18th, if you haven't registered already to attend, the Global Dialogue Center is hosting a webinar in partnership with Leader to Leader Institute in New York with Mrs. Frances Hesselbein, a celebrated leader of our time, Presidential Medal of Freedom recipient, Peter Drucker's protege, and CEO of Leader to Leader Institute. Joel and I are joining her to talk about leadership and innovation in changing times on the 18th. And we put a flyer up there for you to be able to attend if you want to. It's free to attend. And so with that, Joel, we have a final word, and then we'll transition. We want to thank you for coming to be with us today, for writing all those great things on the wall. A closing thought from you?
Two things. There's always more to innovation than we think, and it's because it is a highly complex human process that allows us to improve the world. Anything you can learn to do better with it will ultimately make the world a better
perfectly said. Thank you. And thank you for joining us. If you have to leave us, we say goodbye and hope you'll come again. Our next one is going to be on August 24th. And we're going to transition into what we call a virtual break, which is being able to talk with you further. And if you have another question or a comment to make, we're going to put a board up here to write on. And we will also be publishing these boards on the website, the ones that have been written on, so you don't lose the insights that people have already written.
And I would just want to stop for a second and congratulate you, Debbie. It is 59 minutes, 59 seconds.
How is that?
By 1 second, I'm being right on the moment. Amazing.
Being able to come down right on the target. That's what we want you to do with your innovations, too, is being able to come down right on the button of time. And if you're patient, you are able to do that, right?
Yep. So does anybody want to open up a mic and ask a question or make an observation or make a recommendation?
Hi, this is Jay. I didn't have a question, actually, but I wanted to mention that one of my main takeaways, not main takeaway, breakthrough takeaway for me was how hard we must work to see new ideas through others' eyes.
Hey, very good.
That theme, Jay, is one of the things that Jim Bright taught me when I was working with him, which was we assume that others see the idea the same way we see it. You should actually assume just the opposite, that they do not see it the way we see it. And then the job is to literally walk around to the other side of the table and say, if I were them and I saw this idea, what am I seeing? What's the value I'm seeing in this idea? What are the threats I'm seeing in this idea? What are the risks I'm seeing in this idea? Because that's what, at least my experience has been with innovation, is the first couple of questions come out are not so much about the advantages, but about the downside of the innovation. So I think that's a good takeaway to carry. Get on the other side of the table, look out through their eyes.
Well, and an add on that is, we generally work pretty hard to understand what people might be thinking and how they might be viewing the world, etc. But we don't work hard at what they're trying to explain as an idea and working between the lines to hear what they're really intending, because new ideas are messy. They're not direct communication patterns.
Yep, that's well said. You hinted at one other thing there, too, that Debbie is really good at, and that is, how are they feeling about it? Sometimes we want to know what they're thinking about it, but we don't care about how they're feeling, and yet the feelings are going to make the final decision.
Thanks.
Very good. Thank you so much. We also have Jessica has her hand up. Jessica, good. Are you there? Can you unmute your mic?
Hi, Debbie, and hi, Joe.
Hi, Jessica.
Thank you
Hi.
Very much. It's been great to be on this webinar. Many things struck me, but two in particular, which I think are complementary, and I appreciate the all of the different ways that I'm starting to that you're pushing me to think about innovation. One was, Debbie, when you spoke about seeing differences differently, and the ways in which that kind of, I think it creates a space, and I really relate to that in my work, that you're really suggesting to us all that we begin to open our minds and look at other people in ways that will allow, I think, possibilities to emerge that wouldn't have been there otherwise. And I saw it as very much connected to the importance that you both placed on generating acceptance for an idea. Because I saw when you put a circle around that and you said that that's often an overlooked step in the process of bringing innovation to light, that what I saw in that second step, generating acceptance, was this enormous potential that when you begin to interact, because what I saw in that was this interactive the nature of the interactivity of what it means to generate acceptance. It's really kind of by definition a two-way street. So I see these two things as very complementary, that you see the differences in the people for whom you who you want to interest in your idea, and thus open up an enormous even something that could go beyond what you first envisaged.
I agree with that too. I think that when it opens up all kinds of possibilities when you're going through the process of building acceptance, because a lot of ideas that are even better, sponsors that are better than you ever dreamed, people who are willing to go out and vouch for you, to open the doors for you, would never have been there. Or in a person-to-person way, I think it's important, Jessica, I know from our work and having you at other events, Jessica is a pianist and a transformational advisor, and she works with people in a very improvisational way to help people with their disabilities and others to be able to bring out their greatest potential in about 5 minutes. She's a really good example of the doing that Joel was talking about. And instead of talking about how you could help somebody to be better, she puts them in the session and lets them be better. So I'm really grateful for your insight and being able to see that for the rest of us too.
Yeah, I'd like to add I was going to add one comment, which is if you take a look at Debbie's spectrum of differences, one of the things that people also do themselves, and this is a leadership role on your part, which is they will put themselves in one of those vectors and not allow the other vectors to, in a sense, come out. And so if you know more about the spectrum of differences your colleagues have, you can invite them not to just be looking at this from their engineering piece of their spectrum or their tennis players part of the spectrum, but for them to engage themselves in looking at more of those pieces of all those different diverse capabilities that they have. Too often we just lock the rest of those away, and so they don't want to know the fact that I also speak Chinese. You know, that's not part of this conversation. It may well be if it's invited out. So I think that's the other thing I like about Debbie's diagram, is it allows you to say, look at all the different points of view we can bring to bear on this, even with a small group of us sitting at this table.
I also think it helps you think about even yourself differently. I think a lot of times we pigeonhole ourselves into being this or that, and we don't really think about, as Peter Drucker said, the full complement of tools and qualities that we've developed over the years that play to create a new innovative solution. And so by looking at learning to see differences differently, not just in others, but also to see yourself differently, you begin to see different people show up. I had one of my mentoring partners one time said to me, I learned that when you stand up for yourself in a confident way, you have a whole different group of people standing with you. And this is true for innovators. When you're struggling with resistance to change, when you're well-informed, when you've got the tools in your tool bag that you're able to mobilize, a lot of which you probably know, but you haven't got them in the right order, or you haven't really, you're not thinking about them, you end up attracting different people to be with you, to sponsor your innovations and your new thinking and ideas on the website. So, Bibi, are you there? And we'll see if we can hear you.
We're barely hearing you, Bibi.
Yeah, I'm definitely not hearing her.
No. You're getting high distortion on your voice.
If you have Skype, you could call in through Skype to the conference line on your, if you look at your instructions.
A question, if you can hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes. Who is this?
All right. My name is Steve.
Hi, Steve.
You can hear me okay?
Yeah. Where are you calling from?
New Jersey.
Welcome, New Jersey.
I have a kind of a weird question. Good. A situation that periodically comes up in that the organization that I'm working with is very can be very, very successful. And when they go through a period of being very successful, everybody sort of runs around in a rather frantic mode, trying to keep the success going, but not knowing why the success is occurring. And consequently, when, shall we say, the success periodically, and it does periodically, runs out, then everybody's standing there scratching their heads on, well, now what do we do and how do we do it?
Yeah.
Because I guess, and I do have to say, I guess my feeling is, and observation is, that some of the folks don't take the time to slow down a little bit during these drives of success or success cycles to understand why the success is occurring, because there are multiple programs, multiple things that are going on. They don't necessarily try and determine what's really the, shall we say, critical success factors.
Yeah.
So any thoughts? And obviously, it the reason for the question is, if there might be a simple solution, then it might be I might be able to use that to help these people reset and drive for new innovation.
Right.
I do have an idea. I think it is a classic idea. It's used in a lot of places. They use it actually in the Army, is famous for their after action review. What I've actually seen happen is ongoing dialogue with people is what works. And if you have teams that are successful, always being able to sit down and ask three simple questions. What's going well to support what we're doing? What's not going as well as we hoped? And what can we do about it? And when you start having those regular, short, they can only even have to be long conversations around whatever's going on, whatever you're trying to do, what you do is you get people comfortable talking with each other. And you also help them be able to, again, put ideas on the table, which stimulates more ideas. So I call, in the book I wrote, I call it action dialogues. But it's, you don't even need a book. I mean, it's that simple of being able to have people feel open and welcome to talk about what's going well, always starting with what's going well, not what's all that's happening that's going wrong. But what are those things that are great that we can point to that are working?
Yeah.
Joel, what do you think?
Well, I was going to say to Steve, I can't tell if I'm muted or not. Am I muted?
No, you're not.
Okay, good. Steve, this is what you're asking. Here's what I heard. We've been successful in cycles. We've never sat down and said, is there commonality in these success cycles? So you are in a situation where if I were coaching you, I'd say this is the time to get a good consultant in who knows how to ask these questions, who is an outsider, because you need an outsider there to help see inside. This is one of these cases where it's too close. And if people are in, if you're in your third or fourth cycle of this kind of thing and you still don't know what's driving the company to do this, this is, you know, aren't we lucky that we've had these cycles? You really need somebody to come in and help you on that. It's not so much an issue of tactics of innovation as it is what Debbie said, which is careful analysis of what did we do that made us successful repeatedly. By the way, you may find out nothing. You may find out each time was a different series of sequences that got you successful. That in of itself is useful to know that you do not have a pattern of success. You've been able to, in a sense, rescue yourselves by changing patterns. But even from that point of view, that's a pattern to know that that's what you do. So I would say find, and there are plenty of good consultants who do this kind of thing, somebody who'd come in and spend a couple of weeks, a month with you to take a look at that, pull it apart, put it back together again in terms of behaviors that were repeatable that led to your success. That would be my recommendation.
One other little thing, too, that I would add to it is this little chart that I showed earlier. And this is the perpetual cycle of action that makes everything work since the beginning of time, right? I mean, you really have to kind of go around this over and over and over and over and over at different phases. And having a conversation, a constant flow of conversation with the people that you're working with so that they are really become one of those really hot teams that not only is doing well, but is constantly elevating what they're doing. And I think Joel's idea of sometimes bringing someone in is a great idea, but anything that you do to complement that person coming in so that when someone comes in, you've got a group that's willing to work with them, that is also another really good way to do it.
Yep, good point.
This is Steve. This is Steve. You've answered the question. Very helpful, very helpful. Thank you.
Good, I'm so glad. Thank you for asking it.
I think we're at our end of our time, too, Deb.
We are, except we've got, BB is now on the conference line.
Oh, she got, okay.
She did, so we're going to let BB have the final word.
All right.
BB, are you there? Star 6 to unmute. So, BB, we hope you'll write to us, and we will try to share your insights. Sorry that you're having technical difficulties.
And come to our next webinar, and we'll work it out in advance so we make sure we hear you, because I want to hear your voice.
I know, me too. That would be great. So we thank you all for being here with us and sharing in the conversation today. We look forward to posting the recording and being with you again at our next webinar.
And we hope you found value in this hour.
Yes.
Thank you.
Have a great day.